Tiberius the Seventh. As they have in Piedmont? If no one else will point out her folly, I certainly must. Prince Bracken dances on their strings, controlled. Reports indicate they have taken his children. You would so willingly let your grandson become their puppet, too? I came here eager to see others kneel. I remain seated, but I feel bare before Annabelle as she grins. As your mother said so eloquently, they seek to make equal that which is not fundamentally equal. Victory is impossible. Silver blood cannot be overthrown. Even the panther is quiet, watching the exchange with ticking eyes. Its tail flicks slowly. I focus on its fur, dark as the night sky. An abyss, just like the one we edge toward. My heart drums a harried rhythm, pumping both fear and adrenaline throughout my body. I don't know which way Father will lean. I don't know what will become of this path. It makes my skin crawl. Of course, Annabelle adds, the Kingdom of Norda and the Kingdom of the Rift would be tightly bound by their alliance, and by marriage. The floor seems to tip beneath me. It takes every ounce of will and pride to remain on my cold and vicious throne. You are steel, I whisper in my head. Steel does not break or bend. But I can already feel myself bowing, giving way to my father's will. He'll trade me in a heartbeat, if it means keeping the crown. The Kingdom of the Rift, the Kingdom of Norda, Volo Samos will take whatever he can grasp. If the latter is out of reach, he will do whatever he can to maintain the first, even if it means breaking his promise, selling me off one more time. My skin prickles. I thought all this was behind us. I am a princess now, my father a king. I don't need to marry anyone for a crown. The crown is in my blood, in me. No, that isn't true. You still need Father. You need his name. You are never your own. Blood thunders in my ears, the roar of a hurricane. I can't bring myself to look up at Elaine. I promised her. She married my brother so we would never be parted. She upheld her side of the bargain, but now? They'll send me to Archeon. She'll stay here with Tali as his wife and, one day, his queen. I want to scream. I want to rip the infernal chair under me to shreds and tear everyone in this room apart, including myself. I can't do this. I can't live like this. A few weeks of the closest thing to freedom I've ever known, and I can't let it go. I can't go back to living for someone else's ambitions. I breathe through my nose, trying to keep my rage in check. I have no gods, but I certainly pray. Say no. Say no. Say no. Please, Father, say no. No one looks at me, my only relief. No one watches my slow unraveling. They only have eyes for my father and his decision. I try to detach, try to put my pain in a box and tuck it away. It's easy to do in training, in a fight, but it's almost impossible now. Of course, the voice in my head laughs sadly. Your path always led here, no matter what. I was made to marry the Kalor heir. Physically made, mentally made, constructed, like a castle or a tomb. My life has never been my own, and it never will be. My father's words drive nails into my heart, each one another burst of bloody sorrow.
To the Kingdom of Norta, and the Kingdom of the Rift.
24. Cameron. It takes Maury longer than the other hostages. Some believed within minutes. Others held out for days, stubbornly clinging to the lies they'd been spoon-fed. The Scarlet Guard is a collection of terrorists. The Scarlet Guard is evil. The Scarlet Guard will make life worse for you. King Maven freed you from war and will free you from more still. Twisted half-truths spun into propaganda. I can understand how they and so many others were taken in. Maven exploited a thirst in Reds who didn't know what it was to be manipulated. They saw a Silver pledging to listen when his predecessors would not, to hear the voices of people who had never been heard, an easy hope to buy into. And the Scarlet Guard are far from innocent heroes. They are flawed at best, combating oppression with violence. The children of the Dagger Legion remain wary. They're all just teenagers bouncing from the trenches of one army to another. I don't blame them for keeping their eyes open. Maury still clings to his misgivings. Because of me, what I am. Maven accused the guard of murdering people like me. No matter how much my brother tries, he can't shake the words. As we sit down to breakfast, our bowls of oatmeal hot to the touch, I brace myself for the usual questions. We like to eat outside on the grass beneath the open sky with the training fields stretched out. After 15 years in our slum, every fresh breeze feels like a miracle. I sit cross-legged, my dark green coveralls soft from wear and too much washing to count. "Why don't you leave?" Maury asks, jumping right in. He stirs the oatmeal 3 times counterclockwise. "You haven't pledged your oath to the guard. You don't have any reason to stay here." "Why do you do that?" I tap his spoon with mine. A stupid question, but an easy dodge. I never have a good answer for him, and I hate that he makes me wonder. He shrugs his narrow shoulders. "I like the routine," he mumbles. "At home? Well, you know home was bleeding awful, but..." He stirs again, the metal scraping. "You remember the schedules, the whistles?" "I do. I still hear them in my dreams." "And you miss that?" He scoffs. "Of course not. I just... not knowing what's going to happen. I don't understand it. It's scary." I spoon up some oatmeal. It's thick and tasty. Maury gave me his sugar ration, and the extra sweetness undercuts whatever discomfort I feel. I think that's how everyone feels. I think it's why I stay. Maury turns to look at me, narrowing his eyes against the glare of the still rising sun. It illuminates his face, throwing into harsh contrast how much he's changed. Steady rations have filled him out, and the cleaner air clearly agrees with him. I haven't heard the scraping cough that used to punctuate his sentences. One thing hasn't changed, though. He still has the tattoo, just as I do. Black ink like a brand around his neck. Our letters and numbers match almost exactly. NT-ARSM-188908. His reads, "Newtown, Assembly and Repair Small Manufacturing. I'm 188907. I was born first." My neck itches at the memory of the day when we were marked, permanently bound to our indentured jobs. I don't know where to go. I say the words out loud for the first time, even though I've been thinking them every day since I escaped Koros. "We can't go home." "I guess not," he mumbles. "So what do we do here? You're going to stay and let these people... I told you before, they don't want to kill new bloods. That was a lie, Maven's lie. I'm not talking about that. So the Scarlet Guard isn't going to kill you, but they're still putting you in danger. You spend every minute you're not with me training to fight, to kill. And in Corvium, I saw when you let us out. Don't say what I did. I remember it well enough without him describing the way I killed two Silvers. Faster than I've ever killed before. Blood pouring from their eyes and mouths, their insides dying organ by organ as my silence destroyed everything in them. I felt it then. I feel it still. The sensation of death pulses through my body. I know you can help. He puts his oatmeal down and takes my hand. In the factories, I used to hold on to him. Our roles reverse. I don't want to see them turn you into a weapon. You're my sister, Cameron. You did everything you could to save me. Let me do the same. With a huff, I fall back against the soft grass, leaving the bowl at my side. He lets me think, and instead turns his eyes on the horizon. He waves a dark hand at the fields in front of us. It's so bleeding green here. Do you think the rest of the world is like this? I don't know. We could find out. His voice is so soft, I pretend not to hear him, and we lapse into an easy silence. I watch spring winds chase clouds across the sky while he eats, his motions quick and efficient. Or we could go home. Mama and Dad. Impossible. I focus on the blue above. Blue like we never saw in that hellhole we were born in. You saved me. And we almost died. Better odds and we almost died. I exhale slowly. There's nothing we can do for them right now. I thought maybe once, but all we can do is hope. Sorrow tugs at his face, souring his expression, but he nods. And stay alive. Stay ourselves. You hear me, Cam? He grabs my hand. Don't let this change you. He's right. Even though I'm angry, even though I feel so much hatred for everything that threatens my family, is feeding that rage worth the cost? So what should I do? I finally force myself to ask. I don't know what having an ability's like. You have friends who do. His eyes twinkle as he pauses for effect. You do have friends, right? He quirks a smirk at me over the rim of his bowl. I smack his arm for the implication. My mind jumps to Farley first, but she's still in the hospital, adjusting to a new baby, and she doesn't have an ability. Doesn't know what it's like to be so lethal, in control of something so deadly. I'm scared, Maury. When you throw a tantrum, you just yell and cry. With me? With what I can do? I reach a hand to the sky, flexing my fingers against the clouds. I'm scared of it. Maybe that's good. What do you mean? At home. You remember how they use the kids? To fix the big gears, the deep wires? Maury widens his dark eyes, trying to make me understand. The memory echoes. Iron on iron, the screech and twist of constantly whirring machinery across endless factory floors. I can almost smell the oil, almost feel the wrench in my hand. It was a relief when Maury and I got too big to be spiders, what the overseers called the little kids in our division. Small enough to go where adult workers couldn't, too young to be afraid of being crushed. Fear can be a good thing, Cam. He pushes on. Fear doesn't let you forget. And the fear you have, the respect you have for this deadly thing inside of you, I think that's an ability too. My oatmeal is cold now, but I force a mouthful so I don't have to talk. Now the sugary taste is overpowering, and the glop sticks to my teeth. Your braids are a mess, Maury mutters to himself. He turns to another routine, an old one familiar to us both. Our parents worked earlier than we did, and we had to help each other get ready at dawn. He's long since known how to fix my hair, and it takes no time at all for him to untangle it. It feels good to have him back, and I'm overcome with emotion as he plaits my curly black hair into two braids. He doesn't push me to make a decision, but the conversation is enough to let questions I already had rise to the surface. Who do I want to be? What choice am I going to make? In the distance, around the edge of the training fields, I spot two familiar figures, one tall, one short, both of them jogging the boundary. They do this every day. Their exercise is familiar to most of us. Despite Cal's much longer legs, Mare doesn't have a problem keeping up. As they get closer, I can see her smiling. I don't understand a lot of things about the Lightning Girl, and smiling during a run is one of them. Thanks, Maury, I say, getting to my feet when he finishes. My brother doesn't stand with me. He follows my gaze, laying eyes on Mare as she gets closer. She doesn't make him tense up, but Cal does. Maury quickly busies himself with the bowls, ducking his head to hide his scowl. No love lost between the Coles and the Prince of Norda. Mare raises her chin as she jogs, acknowledging us both. The prince tries to hide his annoyance when she slows her pace, easing into a walk to approach me and Maury. Cal doesn't do it well, but he nods at both of us in an attempt at a polite greeting. Morning, Mare says, shifting from foot to foot as she catches her breath. Her complexion has improved more than anything. A golden warmth is returning to her brown skin. Cameron, Maury, she says, her eyes ticking between us with cat-like speed. Her brain is always spinning, looking for cracks. After what she's been through, how could she be any other way? She must sense the hesitation in me, because she stays put, waiting for me to say something. I almost lose my nerve, but Maury brushes against my leg. Just bite the bullet, I tell myself. She might even understand. Would you mind taking a walk with me? Before her capture, she would have scoffed, told me to train, brushed me away like an annoying fly. She barely tolerated me. Now she bobs her head. With a single gesture, Mare waves off Cal like only she can. Prison changed her, like it changed us all. Sure, Cameron. It feels like I talk for hours, spilling everything I've been keeping inside. The fear, the anger, the sick sensation I get every time I think about what I can do and what I've done. How it used to thrill me. How such power made me feel invincible, indestructible. And now it makes me feel ashamed. It feels like stabbing myself in the stomach and letting my guts fall out. I avoid her eyes as I speak, keeping my gaze firmly on my feet as we pace the training grounds. As we press on, more and more soldiers flood the field. New bloods and reds, all going through their morning exercises. In their uniforms, green coveralls provided by Montfort. It's hard to tell which is which. We all look the same, united. I want to protect my brother. He tells me we should go, leave. My voice weakens, trailing off until there are no more words. Mare is forceful in her reply. My sister says the same thing, every day. She wants to take up Davidson's offer. Relocate. Let other people fight. Her eyes darken with intensity. They wobble over the landscape full of green uniforms. She is mechanical in her observations, whether she knows it or not, reading risks and threats. She said we've given enough. So what will you do? I can't turn my back. She bites her lip, thoughtful. There's too much anger in me. If I don't find a way to get rid of it, it might poison me for the rest of my life. But that probably isn't what you want to hear. It would be an accusation from anyone else, from Cal or Farley, from who Mare was 6 months ago. Instead, her words are softer. Holding on will eat me alive, I admit. Continuing on this way, using my ability to kill, it will make me a monster. Monster. She shivers when I say it, withdrawing inside herself. Mare Barrow has had her fair share of monsters. She looks away, idly tugging on a braid of hair curling with sweat and humidity. Monsters are so easily made, especially in people like us. She mumbles, but she recovers quickly. You didn't fight in Archeon.
Or if you did,
I didn't see you. No, I was just there to keep you in check. In the moment, a good plan, but now that I know what she went through, I feel terrible. She doesn't push. Killorn's idea back in trial, I say. He works well branching the New Bloods and Reds, and he knew I wanted to take a step back, so I went along. But not to fight, not to kill, unless absolutely necessary. And you want to continue on that path? Not a question. Slowly, I nod. I shouldn't feel embarrassed. I think it's better this way. Defend, not destroy. At my side, my fingers flex. Silence pulls beneath my flesh. I don't hate my ability, but I can hate what it does. Mare fixes me with a grin. I'm not your commander. I can't tell you what to do or how to fight, but I think it's a good idea. And if anyone tries to tell you otherwise, point them my way. I smile. Somehow I feel a weight lift. Thanks. I'm sorry, by the way, she adds, coming closer. I'm the reason you're here. I know now what I did to you, forcing you to join up. It was wrong, and I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. You did wrong. That's for bleeding sure. But I got what I wanted in the end. Maury, she sighs. I'm glad you got him back. Her smile doesn't disappear. But it certainly fades, weakened by all mention of brothers. On the low rise ahead, Maury waits, now standing in silhouette against the base buildings spread out behind him. Cal is gone. Good. Even though he's been with us for months, Cal is awkward without purpose, bad at conversation, and always on edge when he doesn't have a strategy to mull over. Part of me still thinks he sees us all as disposable. Cards to be picked up and thrown away as strategy dictates. But he loves Mare, I remind myself. He loves a girl with red blood. That must count for something. Before we make it back to my brother, one last fear bubbles up in my throat. Am I abandoning you all? The New Bloods. My ability is silent death. I am a weapon, like it or not. I can be used, I can be useful. Is it selfish to walk away? I get the feeling it's a question Mare has asked herself many times, but her answer is for me and me alone. Of course not, she mutters, You're still here, and you're one less monster for us to worry about. One less ghost.
25. Mare. Even though my time at the Notch was fraught with exhaustion and heartbreak, it still holds a corner of my heart. For once, I remember the good more vividly than the bad. Days when we returned with living new bloods, snatched from the jaws of execution, it felt like progress. Every face was proof that I was not alone, and that I could save people as easily as kill them. Some days, it felt simple. Right. I've been chasing that sensation ever since. The Piedmont base has its own training facilities, both indoor and outdoor. Some are equipped for Silvers, the rest for Red soldiers to learn war. The Colonel and his men, now numbering in the thousands and growing every day, claim the shooting range. New bloods like Ada, with those less devastating abilities, train with him, perfecting their aim and combat skills. Killorn shuttles between their ranks and the new bloods on the Silver training grounds. He belongs with neither group, yet his presence soothes many. The fish boy is the opposite of a threat, not to mention a familiar face, and he doesn't fear them like so many of the true red soldiers. No, Killorn has seen enough from me to never be afraid of a new blood ever again. He accompanies me now, escorting me around the edge of a building about the size of an airjet hangar, but it has no runway. Silver gymnasium, he says, pointing at the structure. All sorts of stuff in there. Weights, an obstacle course, an arena. I get it. I learned my skills in a place like that, surrounded by leering silvers who would kill me if they saw one drop of my blood. At least I don't have to worry about that anymore. Probably shouldn't train anywhere with roof or light bulbs. Killorn snorts. Probably not. One of the gymnasium doors bangs open, and a figure steps out, a towel around his neck. Cal scrubs sweat off his face, still silver-flushed with exertion. Weightlifting, I assume. He narrows his eyes and closes the distance between us as quickly as he can. Still panting, he puts a hand out. Killorn takes it with an open grin.
Killorn, Cal nods. Taking her on a tour?
Yeah, nah, she's going to start up with some of the others today. Killorn speaks over me, and I resist the urge to elbow him in the gut.
What? Cal darkens. He heaves a deep breath. I thought you were going to give yourself more time.
Killorn surprised me in the hospital, but he's right. I can't sit around anymore. It feels useless, and I am restless, with anger boiling beneath my skin. I'm not Cameron. I'm not strong enough to step back. Even light bulbs have started sparking when I enter a room. I need release. It's been a few days. I thought it over. I put my hands on my hips, bracing myself against his inevitable counter. Without even realizing it, Cal settles into his patented arguing with Mare stance. Arms crossed, brow furrowed, feet firmly planted. With the sun behind me, he has to squint, and after his workout, he reeks of sweat. Killorn, the rotten coward, backs away a few steps. I'll see you when you finish having a moment. He tosses a shit-eating grin over his shoulder, leaving me to fend for myself. Just a minute, I call at his retreating form. He only waves, disappearing around the corner of the gymnasium. Some backup he is. Not that I need it, I add quickly, since it's my decision and this is just training. I'll be perfectly fine. Well, half my worry is for the people in the blast zone, and the rest... He takes my hand, using it to pull me closer. I wrinkle my nose, digging in my heels. Not that it matters much. I slide along the pavement anyway. You're all sweaty. He grins, wrapping one arm around my back. No escape. Yep. The scent isn't entirely unpleasant, even though it should be. So you're not going to fight me on this?
Like you said, your decision.
Good. I don't have the energy to bicker twice in one morning. He shifts and pushes me back gently, to better see my face. His thumbs graze the underside of my jaw.
Geesa.
Geesa, I huff, brushing a wisp of hair out of my face.
Without the Silent Stone, my health has vastly improved, down to my nails and hair growing at a normal rate again. Still gray ends, though. That's never going away. She keeps bothering me about relocation. Go to Montfort, leave everything behind.
And you told her, go ahead, didn't you?
I blush scarlet. It just slipped out. Sometimes I don't think before I speak. He laughs.
What? You?
And then Mom took her side, of course, and Dad didn't take a side at all, playing peacemaker, of course. It's like... My breath hitches. It's like nothing ever changed. We could have been back in the stilts, in the kitchen. I guess that shouldn't bother me so much, in the scheme of things. Embarrassed, I force myself to look up at Cal. It feels horrible complaining about family to him. But he asked, and it spilled out. He just studies me like I'm battlefield terrain. This isn't something you want to think about. It's nothing. His grip on my hand tightens before I can even think to pull away. He knows the way I run. Actually, I was thinking about all the soldiers I trained with. At the front, especially. I've seen soldiers come back whole in body but missing something else. They can't sleep, or maybe they can't eat. Sometimes they slide right back into the past, into a memory of battle, triggered by a sound or a smell or any other sensation. I gulp and circle my wrist with shaking fingers. Squeezing, I remember the manacles. The touch makes me sick. Sounds familiar.
You know what helps?
Of course I don't, or else I'd do it. I shake my head.
Normalcy. Routine. Talking. I know you don't exactly like the last one, he adds, smirking slowly. But your family just wants you to be safe. They went through hell when you were... gone.
He still hasn't figured out the proper word for what happened to me. Captured or imprisoned doesn't exactly carry the right weight.
And now that you're back, they're doing what anyone would do. They're protecting you. Not the Lightning Girl, not Marina Titanos, but you, Mayor Barrow, the girl they know and remember. That's all.
Right. I nod slowly. Thanks.
So about that talking thing.
Oh, come on, right now? His grin splits and he laughs, his stomach muscles tensing against me.
Fine, later, after training.
You should go shower.
Are you kidding? I'm going to be two steps behind you the whole time. You want to train? Then you're going to train properly.
He pokes me in the small of my back, making me stumble forward.
Come on!
The prince is incessant, jogging backward until I match his pace. We pass the track, the outdoor obstacle course, a wide field of close-cut grass, not to mention several circles of dirt for sparring and a target range more than a quarter mile long. Some new bloods run the obstacle course and the track, while a few practice alone in the field. I don't recognize them, but the abilities I see are familiar enough. A new blood akin to a nymph forms columns of clear water before letting them drop to the grass, creating spreading puddles of mud. A teleporter navigates the course with ease. She appears and disappears all over the equipment, laughing at others having a more difficult time. Every time she jumps, my stomach twists, remembering Shade. The sparring circles unsettle me most of all. I haven't fought someone for training, for sport, since Evangeline, so many months ago. It was not an experience I care to repeat, but I'll certainly have to. Cal's voice keeps me level, drawing my focus back to the task at hand. I'll get you on your weights routine starting tomorrow, but today we can jump into target in theory. Target, I understand.
Theory?
We stop at the edge of the long range, staring at the mist burning off in the distance.
You came into training about a decade late for that. But before our abilities are in fighting form, we spend a lot of time studying our advantages and disadvantages, how to use them.
Like nymphs beating burners, water over fire?
Sort of, that's an easy one.
But what if you're the burner?
I just shake my head, and he grins. See? Tricky. Takes a lot of memorization and comprehension.
Testing. But you're going to do this on the fly.
I forgot how suited to this Cal is. He is a fish in water, at ease, grinning, eager. This is what he's good at, what he understands, where he excels. It's a lifeline in a world that never seems to make any sense.
Is it too late to say I don't want to train anymore?
Cal just laughs, tipping his head back. A bead of sweat rolls down his neck.
You're stuck with me, Barrow.
Now hit the first target. He stretches out a hand, indicating a square granite block 10 yards away, painted like a bullseye.
One bolt, dead center.
Smirking, I do as asked. I can't miss at this range. A single purple-white bolt streaks through the air and hits home. With a resounding crack, the lightning leaves a black mark in the center of the bullseye. Before I have time to feel proud, Cal bodily shoves me aside. Off guard, I stumble, almost falling into the dirt.
Hey!
He just steps away and points. Next target, 20 yards.
Fine,
I huff, turning my eyes on the second block. I raise my arm again, ready to aim, and Cal shoves me again. This time my feet react more quickly, but not enough, and my bolt goes wild, crackling into the dirt. This feels very unprofessional.
I used to do this with someone firing blanks next to my head. Would you prefer that?
He asks. I shake my head quickly. Then hit the target. Normally I'd be annoyed, but his smile spreads, making me blush. It's training, I think. Get a hold of yourself. This time when he goes to push me, I sidestep and fire, clipping the granite marker. Another dodge, another shot. Cal starts to change up his tactic, going for my legs or even burning a fireball across my vision. The first time he does that, I hit the ground so fast, I end up spitting dirt. Hit the target becomes his anthem, followed by a yard marker anywhere between 50 and 10. He shouts the targets at random, all while forcing me to dance on my toes. It's harder than running, much harder, and the sun turns brutal as the day wears on.
The target is a swift. What do you do?
He asks. I grit my teeth, panting. Spread the bolt. Catch him as he dodges.
Don't tell me. Do it.
With a grunt, I swing my arm in a chopping, horizontal motion, sending a spray of voltage in the target's direction. The sparks are weaker, less concentrated, but enough to slow a swift down. Next to me, Cal just nods his head, the only indication that I did something right. It feels good, anyway.
30 yards. Banshee.
Clapping my hands to my ears, I squint at the target, willing lightning without use of my fingers. A bolt vaults from my body, arcing like a rainbow. It misses, but I splash the electricity, making the sparks burst in different directions.
5 yards, silence.
The thought of an Arvin floods me with panic. I try to focus. My hand strays for a gun that isn't there, and I pretend to shoot the target.
Bang.
Cal snorts a bit.
That doesn't count, but okay. 5 yards, magnetron.
That one I know intimately. With all the force I can muster, I rocket a blast of lightning at the target. It cracks in two, sliding apart at dead center.
Theory?
A soft voice says behind us. I was so focused on the range that I didn't notice Julian standing by to watch, with Killorn at his side. My old teacher offers a tight smile, his hands folded behind his back in his usual way. I've never seen him so casually dressed, with a light cotton shirt and shorts, revealing thin chicken legs. Cal should get him on a weights routine, too.
Theory,
Cal confirms.
After a fashion.
He waves me down, giving me a brief respite. Immediately I sit in the dirt, stretching out my legs. Despite the constant dodging, it's the lightning that makes me tired. Without the adrenaline of battle or the threat of death hanging over my head, my stamina is decidedly lessened. Not to mention the fact that I'm about 6 months out of practice. With even motions, Killorn stoops and puts a frosty water bottle down at my side.
Thought you might need this, he says with a wink.
I grin up at him. Thanks, I manage, before gulping down a few cold mouthfuls. What are you doing down here, Julian?
Just on my way to the archives. Then I decided to see what all the fuss was about.
He gestures over his shoulder.
I jolt at the sight of a dozen or so assembled on the edge of the range, all of them staring at us. At me. Seems you have a bit of an audience. I grit my teeth. Great. Cal shifts, just a bit, to hide me from view.
Sorry. Didn't want to break your concentration.
It's fine, I tell him, forcing myself to stand. My limbs groan in protest.
Well, I'll see you both later,
Julian says, looking between me and Cal. I answer quickly, we can go with you, but he cuts me off with a knowing smirk, gesturing toward the crowd of bystanders.
Oh, I think you have introductions to make, Killorn. Would you mind?
Not at all,
Killorn replies. I want to smack the grin right off his face, and he knows it.
After you, Mayor.
Fine. I force through a clenched jaw. Fighting my natural instinct to slink away from attention, I take a few steps toward the Newbloods. A few more. Until I reach them, Cal and Killorn alongside. In the Notch, I didn't want friends. Friends are harder to say goodbye to. That hasn't changed, but I see what Killorn and Julian are doing. I can't close myself off from others anymore. I try to force a winning smile at the people around me. Hi, I'm Mare. It sounds stupid and I feel stupid. One of the Newbloods, the teleporter, bobs her head. She has a forest green Montfort uniform, long limbs, and closely cropped brown hair.
Yeah, we know.
I'm Arezzo, she says, sticking out a hand. I jumped you and Kalor out of Archeon.
No wonder I didn't recognize her. The minutes after my escape are still a blur of fear, adrenaline, and overpowering relief.
Right, of course.
Thank you for that. I blink, trying to remember her. The others are just as friendly and open, as pleased to meet another new blood as I am. Everyone in this group is Montfort-born or Montfort-allied, in green uniforms with white triangles on the breast and insignia on each bicep. Some are easy to decipher. Two wavy lines for the nymph-like new blood, three arrows for the swift. No one has badges or medals, though. There's no telling who might be an officer. But all are military-trained, if not military-raised. They use last names and have firm handshakes, each one a born or made soldier. Most know Cal on sight and nod at him in very official manner. Killorn they greet like an old friend.
Where's Ella?
Killorn asks, directing his question at a man with black skin and shockingly green hair. Dyed, clearly. His name is Rafe. I sent her a message to come down and meet Mare. Titan, too.
Last I saw, they were practicing on top of Storm Hill, which, technically, he glances at me, almost apologetic, is where Electricons are supposed to train.
What's an Electricon? I ask, and immediately feel foolish.
You?
I sigh, sheepish. Right. I figured that about as soon as I asked. Rafe floats a spark over his hand, letting it weave between his fingers. I feel it, but not like my own lightning. The green sparks answer to him and him alone.
It's an odd word, but we're odd things, aren't we?
I stare at him, almost breathless with excitement.
You're...
like me? He nods, indicating the lightning bolts on his sleeves.
Yes, we are.
Storm Hill is just like it sounds. It rises at a gentle incline in the middle of another field, at the opposite end of the base, as far from the airfield as possible, less chance of hitting a jet with a stray bolt of lightning. I get the sense the hill is a new addition, judging by the loose earth beneath my feet as we approach the summit. The grass is new growth, too, the work of a greeny or new blood equivalent. It's more lush than the training fields. But the crown of the slope is a mess. Charred earth packed flat, crisscrossed by cracks and the smell of a distant thunderstorm. While the rest of the base enjoys bright blue skies, a black cloud revolves over Storm Hill. A thunderhead, rising thousands of feet into the sky like a column of dark smoke. I've never seen anything like it. So controlled and contained. the blue-haired woman from Archeon, stands beneath the cloud, her arms outstretched, palms up to the thunder. A straight-backed man with swooping white hair like a wave's crest stands back from her, thin and lean in his green uniform. Both have lightning bolt insignia. Blue sparks dance over the woman's hands, small as worms. Wraith leads us, Cal close at my side. Even though he deals with his fair share of lightning, the black cloud puts him on edge. He keeps glancing up, as if expecting it to explode. Some blue flashes weakly in the darkness, illuminating it from within. Thunder rumbles with it. Low and thrumming like a cat's purr, it shivers my bones. Ella! Titan! Cal calls. He waves a hand. They turn at their names, and the flashing in the clouds abruptly stops. The woman lowers her hands, tucking away her palms, and the thunderhead starts to dissolve before our eyes. She bounds over in leaps of energy, trailed by the more stoic man. I was wondering when we would meet, she says, her voice high and breathy to match her dainty stature. Without warning, she takes my hands and kisses me on both cheeks. Her touch shocks, sparks leaping from her skin to mine. It doesn't hurt, but it certainly perks me up. I'm Ella, and you're Mare, of course, and this tall drink of water is Titan. The man in question is certainly tall, with tawny skin, a sprinkling of freckles, and a jaw sharper than the edge of a cliff. With a flick of his head, he tosses his white hair to one side, letting it fall over his left eye. He winks with the right. I expected him to be old with hair like that, but he can't be more than 25. Hello, is all he says, his voice deep and certain. Hi, I nod at them, overwhelmed both by their presence and my own inability to act anywhere close to normal. Sorry, this is a bit of a shock. Titan rolls his eyes, but Ella bursts out laughing. A half second later, I understand and cringe. Cal chuckles at my side. That was pretty horrible, Mare. He nudges my shoulder as discreetly as he can, a brush of warmth emanating from him, a very small comfort in the Piedmont heat. We understand, Ella offers quickly, stealing the words away. It's always overwhelming to meet another Ardent, let alone three who share your ability. Right, boys? She elbows Titan in the chest, and he barely reacts, annoyed. Rafe just nods. I get the feeling Ella does most of the talking, and based on what I remember from the blue lightning storm in Archeon, most of the fighting. I despair of you both, Ella mutters, shaking her head at them. But I have you now, don't I, Mare? Her eager nature and open smile take me severely off guard. People this nice are always hiding something. I swallow my suspicion enough to give her what I hope is a genuine smile. Thank you for bringing her, she adds to Cal, her tone shifting. The cheery blue-haired pixie draws up her spine and hardens her voice, becoming a soldier before my eyes. I think we can take her training from here. Cal barks out a low laugh. Alone? Are you serious? Were you? She shoots back, narrowing her eyes. I saw your practice. Little bursts on a target range is hardly sufficient to maximize her abilities. Or do you know how to coax a storm out of her? Based on the way his lips twist, I can tell he wants to say something decidedly inappropriate. I stop him before he can, grabbing his wrist. Cal's military background is fine for conditioning, Ella cuts me off, and perfect for training you to fight Silvers the way he does. But your abilities stretch beyond his understanding. There are things he can't teach you, things you must learn either the hard way, by yourself, or the easy way, with us. Her logic is sound, albeit unsettling. There are things Cal can't teach me, things he doesn't understand. I remember when I tried to train Cameron. I didn't know her ability the same way I knew mine. It was like speaking a different language. I was still able to communicate, but not truly. I'll watch, then, Cal says with stony resolve. Is that acceptable? Ella grins, her mood bouncing back to cheerful. Of course. I would, however, advise you to stand back and stay alert. Lightning is a bit of a wild filly. No matter how much you rein her in, she'll always try to run wild. He gives me one last look and the tiniest quirk of a supportive smile before heading to the edge of the hilltop, well beyond the ring of blast marks. When he gets there, he flops down and leans back on his arms, eyes trained on me. He's nice.
For a prince, Ella offers.
And a silver, Rafe pipes in. I glance at him, confused. There aren't nice silvers in Montfort?
I wouldn't know. I've never been, he replies. I'm Piedmont-born, from down in the Floridians.
He dots his fingers in the air, illustrating the chain of swampy islands.
Montfort recruited me a few months ago.
And you too? I look between Ella and Titan. She's quick to reply. Prairie, the Sandhills, that's raider country, and my family lived on the move. Eventually, we kept west into the mountains. Montfort took us in near 10 years ago. That's where I met Titan.
Montfort-born, he says, as if that's any explanation. Not very talkative, probably because Ella has enough words for all of us.
She steers me toward the center of what can only be called a blast zone, until I'm directly beneath the still-dissipating storm cloud.
Well, let's see what we're working with, Ella says, nudging me into place.
The breeze rustles her hair, sending bright blue locks over one shoulder. Moving in tandem, the other two take up spots around me until we're clustered in the four corners of a square.
Start small.
Why?
Titan looks up. She wants to check your control.
Ella nods. I heave a breath. Excited as I am with fellow electricons, I feel a bit like an over-nannied child.
Fine.
Cupping my hands, I call forth the lightning, letting jagged sparks of purple and white splay around the bowl of my fingers.
Purple sparks? Rafe says, grinning. Nice!
I flicker between the unnatural colors on their heads, smirking. Green, blue, white locks. I have no plans to dye my hair. Summer hits Piedmont with a boiling vengeance, and Cal is the only person who can stand it. Gasping from exertion and heat, I smack him in the ribs until he rolls away. He does so slowly, lazily, almost drifting off to sleep. Instead, he goes too far and falls right off the narrow bed onto the hard, laminated floor. That wakes him up. He vaults forward, black hair sticking up at angles, naked as a newborn.
My colors, he curses,
rubbing his skull. I have little pity for his pain. If you didn't insist on sleeping in a glorified broom closet, this wouldn't be an issue. Even the ceiling, blocks of speckled plaster, is depressing. And the single open window does nothing for the heat, especially in the middle of the day. I don't want to think about the walls or how thin they might be. At least he doesn't have to bunk with other soldiers. Still on the floor, Cal grumbles.
I like the barracks.
He fumbles for a pair of shorts before pulling them on. Then go the bracelets, snapping back into place on his wrists. The latches are complicated, but he slips them on like it's second nature.
And you don't have to share a room with your sister.
I shift and throw a shirt over my head. Our midday break will be over in a few minutes, and I'm expected up on Storm Hill soon. You're right. I'll just get over that little thing I have about sleeping alone. Of course, by thing, I mean still debilitating trauma. I have terrible nightmares if there isn't someone in the room with me. Cal stills, shirt half over his head. He sucks in a breath. Wincing.
That's not what I meant.
It's my turn to grumble. I pick at Cal's sheets, military issue, washed so many times they're almost worn through. I know. The bed shifts, springs groaning, as he leans toward me. His lips brush the crown of my head.
Any more nightmares?
No. I answer so quickly, he raises an eyebrow in suspicion, but it's the truth. As long as Geese is there, she says I don't make a sound. Her, on the other hand, I forgot so much noise could come from such a small person. I laugh to myself and find the courage to look him in the eye.
What about you?
Back in the Notch, we slept side by side. Most nights, he tossed and turned, muttering in his sleep. Sometimes he cried. A muscle ripples in his jaw.
Just a few. Maybe twice a week, that I can remember.
Of?
My father, mostly.
You.
What it felt like to be fighting you, watching myself try to kill you, and not being able to do a thing to stop it.
He flexes his hands in memory of the dream.
And Maven, when he was little?
6 or 7. The name still feels like acid in my bones, even though it's been so long since I last saw him. He has given several broadcasts and declarations since, but I refuse to watch them. My memories of him are terrorizing enough. Cal knows that, and out of respect for me, he absolutely does not talk about his brother. Until now.
You asked, I scold myself.
I grit my teeth, mostly to stop from vomiting up all the words I haven't told him. Too painful for him. It won't help to know what kind of monster his brother was forced into becoming. He pushes on, eyes far away in the memory.
He used to be afraid of the dark, until one day he just wasn't. In my dreams, he's playing in my room, sort of walking around, looking at my books, and darkness follows him. I try to tell him, try to warn him. He doesn't care. He doesn't mind, and I can't stop it. It swallows him whole.
Slowly, Cal runs a hand down his face.
Don't need to be a whisper to know what that means.
Ilara is dead, I murmur, moving so we're side by side, as if that's any comfort.
And he still took you. He still did horrible things.
Cal stares at the floor, unable to hold my gaze.
I just can't understand why.
I could keep quiet, or distract him, but the words boil furiously in my throat. He deserves the truth. Reluctant, I take his hand. He remembers loving you, loving your father. But she took that love away, he said. Cut it out of him like a tumor. She tried to do the same with his feelings for me, and Thomas before, but it didn't work. Certain kinds of love. My breath hitches. He said they're harder to remove. I think the attempt twisted him, more than he already was. She made it impossible for him to let go of me. Everything he felt for both of us was corrupted, made into something worse. With you, hatred. With me, obsession. And there is nothing either of us could do to change him. I don't even think she could undo her own work. His only reply is silence, letting the revelation hang in the air. My heart breaks for the exiled prince. I give him what I think he needs. My hand, my presence, and my patience. After a long, long time, he opens his eyes.
As far as I know, there are no new blood whispers, he says. Not one that I've found or been told about, and I've done my fair share of searching.
This I did not expect. I blink, confused.
New bloods are stronger than silvers.
And Ilara was just silver.
If someone can fix him, isn't it worth it to try?
I don't know, is all I can say. Just the idea numbs me, and I don't know how to feel. If Maven could be healed, so to speak, would that be enough to redeem him? Certainly it won't change what he's done. Not only to me and Cal, to his father, but to hundreds of other people. I really don't know. But it gives Cal hope. I see it there, like a tiny light in the distance of his eyes. I sigh, smoothing his hair. He needs another cut with a steadier hand than his own. I guess if Evangeline can change, maybe anyone can. His sudden laugh echoes low in his chest.
Oh, Evangeline is the same as always. She just had more incentive to let you go than to let you stay.
How do you know?
Because I know who told her to do it.
What? I ask sharply.
With a sigh, Cal gets up and crosses the room. The opposite wall is all cabinetry and mostly empty. He doesn't have many possessions beyond his clothes and a few